Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for sticking with us on this Friday morning. 251-343-0106 if you would like to respond to anything we are discussing this morning. Still to come on the program, State Representative Charlotte Meadows. That's in about a half hour from News Talk 93.1 in Montgomery. April Marie Fogle, former State Senator Paul Sanford, and our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. So as you can tell, there's still a jam-packed program remaining. But joining us now, always a pleasure to bring on this next guest. Good time to hear from him, from 2nd Congressional District, Congressman Barry Moore. Congressman, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Good morning, Jeff. How are you, sir?
Doing well. Well, here we are today, a second day of a Russian invasion into Ukraine. Not really clear the U.S. could do much to stop this. Well, it never was clear from the get-go, but just your reaction to what's going on there.
Well, you know, obviously, we knew this was coming. Many of us felt like the weakness, just Afghanistan itself and the pipelines when we allowed Nord Stream 2 to go forward in Russia. I was in Ukraine in August, and the concern with the parliament and many of the members that we met with, even in the embassy, was that the pipeline itself had kind of given Putin the green light in many ways. It gave him the revenue streams, it gave him control kind of energy, and certainly it gave him, I think, a stranglehold on much of Europe on how and where they would get their energy. And that's also a revenue stream for Vladimir Putin. So there were concerns then, and I think that we're seeing this play out, that the failed withdrawal from Afghanistan, it sends the wrong signals to bullies around the world. And so, you know, I say this, the Ukrainian people are tough, and I met with some pretty hardened soldiers, some reserves, and some active duty people who, I can tell you, they're tough, and they would be a formidable force. But at the same time, I don't know with the numbers and the weakness that the rest of us seem to be showing in support, I don't know how well it's going to bode well, or how well it's going to bode for them in defending their nation. But Russia won't have an easy go of it, but it's going to be tough on both sides.
What else should the U.S. do here? I know we sent some resources. We're talking about sanctions, and we're leaving more sanctions on the table if Vladimir Putin goes any further. What is the right path ahead for U.S. domestically?
Well, I think if President Biden would have come out on energy yesterday morning and said something that we're about to establish U.S. energy independence. We're going to offer our European friends options. We're going to open up the Keystone Pipeline. There were some things we could do because Russia makes most of their revenue streams a lot, and we have a third of their revenue off sale of gas. And so I think that would have been a strong signal. The calls we were on last night as we were discussing this with the cabinet from the Biden administration, you know, they were thinking that these sanctions that they're trying to impose now are going to take time to play out. Well, the Ukrainian people don't have a lot of time. And so we've certainly got to protect President Zelensky so we have a pathway to fund revenue and arms and those sort of things to the defense of the nation of Ukraine. But at the same time, you know, we tried a couple of times on the call to ask them, what about the oil that we're buying from Russia? And you know, their response was, well, we didn't want to go too much. Here was their response. I thought it was really odd. They said, well, we don't want to do too many sanctions on the oil and gas industry in Russia because that will drive up the prices for the American people. And I'm thinking, wow, so we're not going to produce domestically. We're not going to drill on federal lands. We're going to buy from Russia, but we don't want to push the price up too much because that makes Vladimir more money and it makes it hard on the American people. At the same time, while we're buying oil from Russia, we're sending arms to Ukraine. And it's just that shows you how out of touch the leadership at the White House and the executive branch and the cabinet level staff and even the SecDef and some of those are. They're just out of touch with the process, or either the president is not allowing them to actually look at solutions that would help us.
We think this sends the message. A lot of people talking about this are speculating what message does it send to China with regards to Taiwan or any other adversary to the United States right now.
It's just another display of weakness. I think in August, when Afghanistan fell like it did and the manner that it fell and how we lost 13 Americans and how we just left our allies high and dry, I think it just sends a message that we don't very well stand with our allies and that we have weak leadership. And I think that's why we saw Crimea fall under Obama. There was no pushback from the U.S. And then they kind of held the line while Trump was there. And then all of a sudden now they're emboldened. I mean, Trump hit Syria. I mean, he took out Soleimani. and he even met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. He sent a message that, oh, by the way, you know, we're here and we're going to lead and don't mess with our allies and our friends. And so, man, it just, we're sending the wrong messages from the highest levels of government in the U.S. right now. I mean, it's concerning for all of our allies around the country.
Something I know that's near and dear to your heart here, and look, I think in just this short amount of time since Biden's been in office, we've seen our military preparedness has suffered. We just seen a different focus from the Biden Pentagon on what they think should be a priority, that it's not necessarily about, the strength, the projecting strength. It's more of a social engineering experiment or something like that. What do you think in a situation where the U.S. could have to pick up arms? Are we ready right now?
You know, that is a huge concern because the woke leadership that we have at the Pentagon and around, even in our military, it's all about being politically correct. I mean, and General Milley sent a pretty poor message when he was concerned about, you know, so many social engineering moves rather than really what it takes to fight and win a war. The military should not be some social experiment. It should be a killing lethal force. And so what we've done is we've allowed everything that woke touches, it messes up. And it doesn't matter what it is. And certainly in the military, there's no place for that. We've got a national defense issue, and you know, and the thing with the Biden administration, this is just another catastrophic misstep from border to the pipeline to, I mean, you name it, inflation, printing money, Afghanistan withdrawal, vaccine mandates. And I say this, Jeff, I think the vaccine mandate was a result of the Biden administration actually wagging the dog. They, as terrible as the narrative was, shortly after Afghanistan and the numbers began to tank and, you know, the Let's Go Brandon chants begin to be a thing in stadiums for the young people across the country. All of a sudden, he comes out with vaccine mandates. And that just kind of changed the news cycle. And that, I'm telling you, this is one more tremendous misstep. And they'll do something. I think he's looking at appoint maybe a new Supreme Court justice today or nominating one. Just to kind of take the narrative off of the failed policies in Ukraine. And so we have to keep an eye on the ball. But national defense, these woke generals, and even in leadership in the House and the Senate, those sort of things that do not protect the American people, don't help the American people, those need to be a thing of the past. We need to move on and get back to what really matters.
Joined by Congressman Barry Morton, 2nd Congressional District here on the program. Looking ahead, we have it, you know, just so many balls moving up in the air trying to juggle them. But November, still elections coming. Republicans look like they are poised to do well. What does a Republican-controlled House need to do to counter the Biden administration and a lot of these failed policies?
Well, I think it's important, and I've mentioned this to the Republican leadership, is that we cannot take a knee, Jeff. Right now, I've said this time and time again. We have played nice for years, and the Republicans, we failed on the repeal of Obamacare when the American people trusted us with that. We dropped the ball. We cannot take a knee deep in our own territory. We've got to move the ball back to midfield. And we control the purse strings in the House, and we were going to have to send a strong message that this runaway spending and these funded mandates, all this stuff that we're doing that hurt the military readiness, that hurt the American people, that impact the everyday working Americans on the bottom line, those sort of things we've got to reverse policy on, and we've got to get fiscal responsibility back where we're not just blowing money and spending money and printing money and devaluing American currency. But not only that, liberty, lock down the southern border, start doing things that really matter to the American people and that really put Americans first. And so there are, like you said, there are so many balls in the air, Jeff. It's hard to know which one to focus on. We have got our work cut out for us. In 12 months I've been in D.C., it's been, we have a saying, you know, we're living the dream. And I say that to my district director all the time. I mentioned my son, who's a freshman at Auburn, a sophomore now. And he said, yeah, Dad, one nightmare at a time. And with the Biden administration, it's been one nightmare after another. And so there are a lot of balls in the air. We have our work cut out for us. And, you know, we're going to have to take some tough, tough stands. But this nation certainly worth fighting for. And I say this all the time. Tip of the spear. I'm the tip of the spear. And as long as these people in Alabama and this congressional district and this great state have our back, we can fight, and we will continue to fight. But it's just, there's a lot in the air to handle, Jeff. There's a lot of damage being done at a rapid rate to our nation and to the American people that we've got to get a hold on. And it's worth fighting for, but it's going to take a lot of work.
Well, and here we are, late February, and one might think that will the Biden administration, will Nancy Pelosi, will Chuck Schumer take another bite at the apple? Will they try to get something big, like a Build Back Better or, a big initiative, Obamacare style, one more last shot at changing the country for the long term? We aren't spending a whole lot of time talking about that because everything else going on in the world, Afghanistan, the border, you name it, inflation, and now Russia. But as far as Congress goes, are you concerned that Pelosi is thinking, well, you know, the end is near and we need to do at least take one more stand here, take one more shot before we lose control of Congress?
Yeah, who knows with Nancy Pelosi? To me, I call it doubling down on dumb. Sometimes they do things that just seem to be just double down on woke or runaway spending or whatever it is. And you see the poll numbers. I mean, you saw what happened in Virginia. I can't say what Pelosi's going to do, but I can tell you this. There is not a lot of appetite right now for more of that kind of just it's good political theater for them, and it's great. But then they get up and get a big loss in the Senate, and it's happened time and time again. I think that, I don't know what they'll do, Jeff. It's hard to say. I just think the Republicans have a great opportunity here and to message on what matters to the American people. We're seeing a lot of people take the red pill, and I think that's wonderful. I mean, when Virginia swung like it did, I was at the Trump Hotel that night, and I was there with Thomas Massie and Madison and Marjorie Taylor. We were all watching it. It was such a relief for us because we had been fighting the fight. We had been talking about crisis in our country and runaway spending and the border and Afghanistan, all these things. And we were all wondering, are the American people listening? Is it falling on deaf ears? And what we saw in Virginia kind of gave us huge encouragement. And that's going to trend. That's going to continue to trend. People are taking a red pill in this country. Election integrity has to be an issue. We're working to make sure that we have great poll watchers and trained people at these polls. But I think that whether Pelosi does something or not, it does not matter at this point. We're going to have an opportunity, and we better lead by example.
And let's kind of expand that discussion to this. You mentioned who you were watching that election night with. A lot of you guys, some of you newer, you mentioned Marjorie Taylor Greene, mentioned Massey Cawthorn, Thomas Massey. Can we look toward 2022 as a time when the Freedom Caucus could expand its ranks within the Republican caucus in the House?
Certainly. I think that's what happened with my class. I mean, we're 12 months ago. But if you look at a lot of who came in with me, Lauren Boebert, Burgess Owens, Marjorie Taylor, Madison Cawthorn, just the list is really, really neat. I mean, it's different people. It's kind of business owners, outsiders, young people who had a passion for conservative ideas. And that was a red wave down the ballot from the top. I mean, we don't know what happened with the presidential election. We have theories, but I can tell you this, down the ballot, those candidates that came in with me, much like me, we were outspent. We weren't supported by the establishment. We were kind of considered outsiders in many ways and true conservatives. And so our class almost probably doubled the size of the House Freedom Caucus just by coming in and so many of us signing on the House Freedom Caucus. And it's going to be the same thing this time. I think the HFC now has a brand. And if it's a brand of just, we're the Republican wing of the Republican Party. We're the true conservatives. And so, and many of us, this is not a career thing. It's just, how can we help save this nation for the next generation? And so they're true statesmen. And so I think you're going to see that in this election, Jeff. What we're going to see, what you're going to see is candidates who are maybe not as well known, or maybe they're not as well funded, or not liked by certain groups. They're going to be the ones that the American people push to the top to lead. And so I'm encouraged. I'm excited. I think you'll see the HFC numbers continue to grow. And we have people all the time in the delegation wanting to join the House Freedom Caucus, but they're not true to their values. They're not true to their convictions. So we have to kind of say, no, thank you. We don't want to water down the conservative ideology that's in the Freedom Caucus. And I think that we'll have a number of members join, and I think it'll give us a lot more leverage with leadership. But I think it's going to be a great time for our nation to see what we can do and how we do, and actually give the voice of the American people back to D.C. And that's kind of neat. It's a great time to be in D.C. As difficult as it is, it's an opportunity for us to do some great things.
And last question, we'll get you out of here on this. You're on election. You may or may not have a primary opponent in Jeff Coleman. I guess we're waiting to see what the courts are going to say about that. But what do you make of that? How do you feel about your prospects in AL2? What do you make of Coleman trying to take another shot at, I guess, unseating you from the nomination?
Yeah, and I mean, that's a great question. And I'm not big on last-minute theatrics. I think that for us, this job was designed to have us run every 24 months, every 2 years. And there was a reason it was designed that way. It was designed so we stayed in touch with the American people. If you know about our campaign, we were outspent 10-1 last time. But it was the people in Alabama, the second congressional district, and the grassroots who got to know who we were. And so when we were elected, we told people we're going to do this. Boom, boom, boom. These are things we're going to put on priority. When we got to D.C., we began to do just those things. And so we're doing a job we were elected to do. We're not out campaigning that, hey, we're going to do this, and we're going to do this. And we've already solved nearly 900 cases for veterans, Social Security issues, passports, and we're still in the district. I mean, if you watch my social media, I'm somewhere. I was at Maxwell Gunner yesterday. I'm somewhere all the time meeting with the people, understanding the people, and trying to make sure that I represent those same people. So for us, it's not about getting elected to do a job. It's about doing a job that people sent us to do, and then let the people decide. But, you know, if they want to keep us, they hired us. If they want to fire us, that's okay. But I can tell you this, it's a great honor. I'm humbled to do it. And it's certainly, you know, for us, we think we've done a great job. We're hearing good things. And so we're going to continue just to stay on mission.
Congressman, you're always very kind to come on this program. Best of luck to you. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you. That was Congressman Barry Moore of the 2nd Congressional District. We're going to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Mississippi.